Welcome, everyone. Here is another Baseball America podcast. Maybe a little noisier than normal on this one. We have John Manuel, Josh Norris, and me, J.J. Cooper, in a car on our way to Kannapolis, which is a little bit of a haul, but Alec Hansen is throwing tonight. The really one of the breakout prospects of the second half of the season. It's a good reason it's the second half of the season. First half of the season, Alec Hansen wasn't a pro. And the White Sox right-hander, who was a second-round pick, if I remember correctly, and has been dominant. And so he's going to make his low Class A debut tonight in Kannapolis, about 2 hours away from the Baseball America World Headquarters in Durham, North Carolina. So, John, as we get ready to see Alec Hansen, it is amazing how far he's went, then came back, and now how far he's gone in the past, I would say, 15 months. Is that a fair way to put it?
It is. And, you know, this trip is part of, is the first time as editor-in-chief that we've done kind of a staff development, at least since 2012. The last time we did staff development, we did a little retreat, JJ, remember, down in Southern Pines for a day, or Pinehurst? Will Lingo does it a little classier than me. I do it in the office. I don't even order food, and we go to Kannapolis. Will took us to Southern Pines. But on that trip, a highlight of that trip was, and Connor Glassy listens to all of our podcasts, and he'll remember this. Connor and I, on the way back, we went to Duke that
Marcus
day.
Marcus Stroman.
So Marcus Stroman against George Washington, and Marcus Stroman struck out 17 that night, and he was just sick. I mean, he was so good. And so I'm hoping Alec Hansen is that good. Here's a guy who has... Alec Hansen checks a lot of boxes for me. He throws hard. He went to high school in Colorado. Connor wrote about him that year.
You do love your Colorado high school
pitchers. I love the Colorado prep phylum of pitchers. Connor wrote about him his high school senior year being hurt that year. He's had on and off injury trouble, but he's never pitched a full season healthy, either since his high school junior year, I guess. That includes just 3 seasons at Oklahoma, and then...
Well, this season, though, he never was sidelined this year with an actual injury.
Yeah, it was not injury, it was just, although he missed the fall with an injury, it was just he didn't throw enough strikes this spring. He went into the spring, JJ, as the potential... he was number two on our board. He was kind of like analogous to Michael Mantuello from the 2015 draft. If he had a healthy full season, he had more stuff than any other college right-hander in the draft class. So it's not a surprise that the White Sox drafted because they like pitching projects. And in a small way, it's not a surprise that he's been good as a pro so far as a White Sox, but he's thrown a lot of strikes. In the Pioneer League, he threw a lot of strikes. Now he's going to take it up a notch in the South Atlantic League. So we thought it was a good time for us to go. I guess 7 of us from the staff are going down to this game. Hopefully it won't be a 7-person tweet storm in your timeline.
It will be a 7-person tweet storm.
It probably will be. But we should have some fun. I haven't been to a Kannapolis game since they were the Boll Weevils, and it was opening day 1996, and I was a wee bee writer for the Hickory Crawdads.
Josh, is this your first Kannapolis?
No, I think they went to one each of the last 2 years. Last year, I was a doubleheader, actually. I saw Spencer Adams versus Luis Ortiz.
Oh, yeah.
And then the previous year, I went for some reason, and I don't remember what it was at this point. I know West Virginia was playing.
It
was not beef jerky. Yonatan Barrios was pitched in that game. And that is really all I remember, because he hit 100.
I think this will get me, I'll be one away from North Carolina minor league bingo. I think the funny thing is the one I have left is the new Charlotte Park. I've been to the old Charlotte Park, but I have yet to be to the new Charlotte Park.
I haven't been to Winston-Salem yet, if you believe that.
I think I've hit them all.
I would not surprise you if you have. That's impressive, though, Josh. Have you been to Kinston?
No,
you have not been to Kinston.
That's not on the board at that point.
It's on the board now.
Yeah, it will be.
So you are now no further along than I am.
I've been to Charlotte.
No, but you haven't been to Kinston, and I have.
But I haven't had the chance to be to Kinston. I can't just go stare at a park.
But, well, before long, we'll have Kinston and Fayetteville as options.
Possibly.
It looks like possibly Fayetteville. Likely Fayetteville, I would say. But we don't know where they'll have that option next year. But back to Hansen.
So
He is a he's interesting also from the standpoint of he's a great reminder of how what players do as amateurs is very important. At the same time, what they do as pros can somewhat wipe away very quickly what they did as amateurs. An example of a guy I'll throw out from the draft class last year is CJ Hinosa, who was a dude coming out of high school, enrolled early. I don't think he's actually, you know, I mean, he was a guy who was a significant prospect when he was in high school, went to Texas. And really at Texas, I think the fair way to say it is that his career went in the wrong direction. He had a really poor junior year.
Yeah, he had a great sophomore year, not statistically, but he performed well right. for a team that doesn't hit for a lot of power in a low offense era in college baseball. And he was the key figure for Texas's College World Series team. Pretty sure the 2014 College World Series was the one with only two home runs hit.
Yeah, I think that
also
was.
Known as the most boring College World Series in the history of College World Series. Pretty good finals, but he hit one of the home runs. And so he was a guy with high school pedigree. And then, I believe it's pronounced Hinojosa, but it's one of my favorite names to hear you say.
Yes, I'm terrible. I apologize, CJ, because I am the worst when it comes to names, especially if I'm not seeing a pronunciation guide.
We'll go CJ from now on, but CJ was... So there was a lot of anticipation, and he wasn't put in the class of the great shortstop college class of 2015, TM. And he wasn't there with Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman and those guys.
Or Mikey White
I think he was there with Mikey White.
That's where you're saying coming into the year.
For me, he should have gone in the Mikey White phylum of players. Guys who... You look at them and you watch them and you don't think they're athletic enough to play shortstop, but the bat should play, and if he's not a shortstop, he's an offensive second baseman and could be a middle infielder. But you did draft coverage in 2015, JJ, and I remember talking to some national guys, and he was a disaster as a junior. He had a brutal year, and what, he went in the 11th round, 12th round of the Giants? And he has
got money in the 11th round, a little bit, not a lot, but like it was something where he was a priority post-10th round guy.
He's done nothing but hit as a pro, and he's in Double-A now.
In Double-A, his numbers have dropped off. That's not that surprising. He is a first full-year pro in Double-A. That means he's moved pretty quickly.
So when you're talking about track record, how much do you weigh the amateur track record? I would say, JJ, that usually I value the track record of the amateur player more than most at BA. I also would say that a hitter who didn't hit in college baseball, I'm usually quite skeptical of those players. The one time I can remember letting the early pro returns really sway me, well, it's one of my favorite impressions of all time, my Omar Minaya, when he told me, don't forget about that Duda guy.
Yeah.
That Duda guy. Because when they from Mets drafted Lucas Duda hit more home runs in half a season at short season Brooklyn that he hit in 3 years at USC. And Lucas Duda was a guy out of high school. And he was a dude. Duda was the dude. And just didn't hit for 3 years in college. But obviously hit enough as a pro to be a starting first baseman on a pennant-winning team. So I guess what I'm wondering is, how many times do we see pitchers, though, who drafted who aren't college performers, how many of those guys ever wind up really being big league contributors? Not many.
And we've got two guys to really look at with this year. Another guy who's been kind of a standout prospect of 2016 is Braves right-hander Patrick Weigel, who played at three schools in college, was really wild as a freshman, was really wild as a sophomore.
More walks than strikeouts in California junior college competition. So not exactly the best caliber of hitter. It's California JUCOs, but right.
Yeah. And then he was significantly better, and especially got better as the year went on at Houston. But still, drafted by the Braves, 7th round, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And at the time he was drafted, you're thinking, good arm. And to be honest, I thought, oh, they're thinking, okay, maybe this guy can develop into control gets a little better, and he develops into a power reliever.
They've already sent him up to Double-A.
He's in Double-A now, and dominated Saturday. Now, he should be really good in the Saturday. He was, again, a three-year college guy. But the control's been much, much better. Getting a chance to start every fifth day, Well, now every 6 day, right before he went up, because they had a 6-man rotation. But getting it started.
Regular work.
And a little bit of tweaks here and there allowed him to throw a lot more strikes than he ever had. And that is one thing. This is not a knock about college baseball, but it is just the reality. Hard-throwing, wild pitchers, that's a very difficult group for college coaches to succeed with a lot of times, because the reality of it is that they have to be able to have some form of success
before
a college coach will use them regularly. And that's understandable. Not like you can't throw them out there okay for an inning on a Tuesday maybe, but if a guy's going to potentially walk 3 guys, he's not pitching a lot on the weekend.
Right. A.J. Puck, everyone knew A.J. Puck was the top prospect on Florida's team for this year's draft, but that didn't mean – but it wasn't a knock on him, I don't think, necessarily, that he wasn't the Friday guy, because Logan Shore was the better college pitcher, even if A.J. Puck had more stuff.
The knock on him was that he wasn't even the really
– he wasn't the second
guy. He wasn't the second guy.
That was the knock.
The knock was that when the series were on the line, he was the third guy that Florida wanted on that mound.
They went to the College World Series, and they lost their first game, and they had an elimination game. They did not start A.J. Puck. They started Alex Fado, this year's, you know, the top prospect on the
both
college.
Both of them well-rested at the time, too, so it wasn't
right. It was a rest, and then Puck came in relief. He threw one pitch, dosed a guy in the helmet. The ball bounced all the way to the opposing, almost all the way to the opposing dugout, and he came out. So he was, in the Alan Simpson parlance, low trust at that point. Alec Hansen was pretty much low trust his whole career at Oklahoma.
The great moments were great. They were few and far between.
Yeah, Josh, you covered some of these guys who do come to mind for these kind of things. The Yankees used to draft some of these guys, too. The Phillies have drafted some of these guys over the years. There was a name that just came in my head and left. Well, Jeremy Blige was more of an injury guy. Mm-hmm. But one of the guys I always think of for this is a deep pull is Ryan Dries. Ryan Dries was the ace of USA Baseball's 95 national team, was supposed to be the ace of the college national team the next year of the Olympics, but he got hurt. Wound up coming back in the 97 draft, but he didn't perform for basically the last 2 years. He was at Cal. He was kind of banged up. That was one of the reasons. Now, he wound up getting to the big leagues, but I just can't think of too many guys. Like Mark McCormick was another guy.
I'll give you an example of a Yankees guy who's been a story in 2016. Fits this a little bit. Chance Adams.
I was waiting for that one.
Chance Adams, not that he was bad by any way.
But he was a reliever.
Part of, I do believe that if they're all healthy, a pitching staff that we'll look back on 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now and go, wow, look at how many of those guys. Corey Taylor.
No wonder Dallas Baptist hosted a regional that year. Right. That's what we'll think. Yeah. But how did they not win that regional?
But Chance Adams has been obviously a starter for the Yankees, and he's been a very good one so far, Josh.
I think he's been the second best arm in that organization, behind James Caprillion, even though Caprillion has been out since April.
Yeah, but I'd say he's been the best one because if Caprillion's your competition.
Well, I mean, he's gonna rank on higher. Caprillion, I think, is still gonna rank higher on their 30, just based on reputation alone and the fact that he hasn't gotten cut on.
I do like James Caprillion.
Yeah. He's been really good, and the only reason he didn't make this year's 30 is because I wasn't sure they were going to start him. They'd hinted that they were going to, but I wasn't sure if it was going to be a true thing where they try to develop him as a starter or they try to widen his arsenal as a reliever and get him into different situations that he might face, because they like to do that in that organization. So I wasn't sold on him actually becoming a starter, but now that he has, I mean, the reports are excellent on the guy. He almost gives up nothing. He does have a little bit of a problem with home runs sometimes, but
he's in Double A in his first full pro season.
Yeah,
and he's a starter.
Yeah, and he's shoving.
Hudson Belinsky, the staff obviously saw him on his way back down from up north, because Hudson does nothing but go to games. But Hudson's game report at BaseballAmerica.com is pretty positive for Chance Adams. This and his stuff, even this late in the season, very firm. And Chance Adams sounded like a guy with a starter's mentality in the interview that Hudson did with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's shoved this year, and all the scouts I've talked to about him say the same thing. You know, he's been really, really good. The ding on him is that he isn't a tall guy, and if he doesn't get the fastball down, it flattens, and he can get hit out. But other than that, he's been the most pleasant surprise and probably the biggest riser in the system this year that I can think of.
No, and I do think I know it's a loaded system, but didn't you have Adams in the top 10 in the midseason?
Yes, yeah. I think I did.
So he is, I mean...
That was before all the trades, too, so...
Yeah.
Now, cracking that top 10 in the Yankee system is a...
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing, because Sanchez and Judge are going to graduate, I imagine, barring anything strange.
Yeah.
Tyler Austin, who, good for Tyler, is going to might graduate.
And then, but you're still going to have Frazier
and Torres and Mateo and Caprillion and guys like that who are going to be high up that list. Rutherford.
And this goes to an interesting kind of like, I got a lot of questions in the chat on Wednesday about Hanson, going back to Alec Hanson. And like some of them were asking, you know, hey, this is a guy, is this guy going to be top 50 going into next season?
Huh.
And my answer was, no, probably not. And the reason for that is that
you can't. How many guys in the 2016 draft will be top 50? Nick Senzel.
Corey Ray.
Maybe.
Yeah, Corey Ray's in high A.
He's doing well in high A.
That's an impressive assignment.
Again, you talk about the high school pitchers. I think Pint and Groom, you know, both could make the 100. I don't think they'll make the 50.
AJ Putt, possibly.
Putt, but I would say probably more of like 50 to 75. Again, if I'm just guessing right now.
I would agree.
So the answer is no.
We didn't even mention Mickey Moe will be in there somewhere.
Yeah, but I still don't know if he'll be, I mean, he's had a really good, you know, debut.
Right. Yeah, I would say he and Rutherford will probably both be in the top 100, but they're not necessarily top 50 guys. So this guy who got drafted after all these guys by 50 spots or so is not going to be the top 50 is the point.
Right, and the thing about it is that I do want to caution people, college players in short season leagues should dominate.
Correct.
That is just that's the reality of it is that it is something where you see what he did, you know, in a short season league, and you go, okay, that's really good. It's really encouraging that Alec Hanson's throwing a lot more strikes, a lot more consistently than really he ever did at Oklahoma. That being said, the difference between what he was doing there, I mean, the reality is that he's not going to get a chance this year to develop the track record to completely wipe away concerns about his control of command. There's not enough innings, and he's doing it at essentially too low a level. He's not going to have 3 starts in high A or double A to show, wow. I mean, again, 3 starts wouldn't do that much, but it still would give you some of that sense of, okay, he really is commanding it. He was at a level where with his stuff, because when Alec Hanson's on, he has 3 pitches that really an 18, 19-year-old kid is going to have no hope, or shouldn't.
And also, an 18 or 19-year-old kid's going to have very little experience having seen. Wait a minute. He's throwing 3 pitches in the strike zone, and they're all pretty good? I can't eliminate one? Or, you know, I've never seen that. So young hitters have rarely dealt with players of his stuff.
Right.
Even the guys who are in pro ball.
Because even if they throw that hard, they usually don't have, they're just throwing that hard.
Right.
At that level.
So, I mean, so it's a great sign that he dominated the Pioneer League. And he's really cemented the fact that he's going to be in the White Sox top 10. And boy, the White Sox need to have a good draft. Just a system that has been, you know, 1 or 2 players per draft
for a
while, I think.
It has been 1 or 2 players per draft, but 1 or 2 players per draft's not an awful thing. Because they're
not their impact.
Because they've had a number of guys who do qualify, I feel like. Like, if you look at their lineup, look at their rotation right now, you are talking about Chris Sale's been a while. But Chris Sale,
2010,
when you got him at that spot where they got him to be the guy he's been, that's a great draft pick. I know that's a few years away, a few years back. Tim Anderson, you need... Can you draw a walk or 2 a month?
Right.
That would be nice.
He's basically a younger, cheaper version of Alexei right now.
Right. But you are talking about a big league shortstop with their first round pick.
Pretty excited about Tim Anderson. If you're the White Sox, you gotta be overjoyed by the year that Tim Anderson's had this year. He's certainly gone to the major leagues and he hasn't looked overmatched in any way. Even though the strikeout and walk rate is that's who he is. So I think they have to be pleased with him.
Carlos Rodon
had a little bit of a down year this year, but he's still clearly a big league starter. And on that rotation, with Sale and Quintana, you don't need him to be anything more than a number three. I think he can do that in 2017 if he takes the lessons of 2016.
And now I'm just waiting to hopefully at September 1st, September 2nd, September 5th, win my bet here with Josh on Zach Birdie.
Who's in the date of the bet?
Yeah, just all year.
If Zach Birdie pitches in the big leagues this year, I win.
Oh, you're losing that one, Josh.
I don't know what the stakes are.
It's a meal. It's a meal at Chubby's.
I'm sure it's Chubby's, but
it's a meal at Chubby's.
As long as we're not going to, like, Ruth's Chris or Lobster Town.
It's a meal at Chubby's, and he's already in AAA.
Lobster Town?
I don't know.
It's a feeding trough of lobsters. It's all you can eat lobsters in a giant trough.
Oh, no.
You have to stab them as they, you know.
They're floating in butter.
Mr. Pinchy, no.
But yeah, so I've got a bet board on that.
I have wiped it clean. So
why did you wipe it clean? That's not
how the bet remember board it. I needed the space for something on the whiteboard.
Then that's not an official bet board. The bet board is something that does not get wiped away.
It never was an official bet board. That's my whiteboard.
So,
and now our readers are bored.
No. So I'll explain to the readers. We do have. We've had the bet board for years, which is.
It's an old bet board.
I mean, this goes back to, like, bets over players who've been retired for quite a while now.
I think you, JJ, you and Will Lingo and I are the only ones who still work here when the bet board started, JJ.
Goodness.
That's an old bet board.
I do remember, like, I mean, who was the catcher for the Mets? There was a Will Kimmy bet board about
Mike Nickias
making the big leagues or not.
Mike Nickias, who I believe was listed today as an assistant coach for Team Great Britain in the World Baseball Classic. He hit, like, 10, 12 home runs at the Northwest League. He had a really nice debut in the North at Spokane for the Rangers. And Will did that league. And Will said, he used a quote in the write-up saying, I could see him hitting 20 home runs a year in the big leagues. And I just lost my bleep about it. I was just beside myself because the college track record was that Mike Nickias didn't have that kind of power. So he brought it all back around again.
Oh, this leads me. When we're done with this, we're going to talk Bobby Dalbec after that.
Okay. This is Bobby Dalbec.
When we talk about guys who have, in their first half season, changed a little bit, he's brought it back to where it was a little bit so far, to where it was coming into the 2016 spring. Terrible year, but finish your bet board story. So, yeah, I think it was Mike Nickias. I don't think it was Mike Nickias 20 homers in a season. I think it was Mike Nickias 20 big league homers.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah, I know Mike got a cup of coffee, but I'm pretty sure. I talked to Mike this year. He was a grad assistant at his alma mater, Georgia Tech, and I think I told him about the bet board, as a matter of fact, while we were sitting up there. We had a good long talk. Mike's a great guy, bright guy, hell of an engineer, but I never thought that he would hit 20 home runs in the major league. So.
Well,
I
am going to wrap this up early. We'll talk Bobby Dalbec at another time because we're going to do some navigating because in about 10 miles, the entire interstate's closed. So we got to hop on Waze.
I'm on Waze. I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good.
Okay, then we'll keep going then. So Bobby Dalbec, who is Helium today on the Baseball America hot sheet, prospect hot sheet, powered by Franklin Sports.
Rare American Helium, is that what you said?
Yeah. So,
okay. It's usually Latin
Palace. Okay. So Bobby Dalbec, though, who was a really good pitcher this year at Arizona, and a
great defensive third baseman.
A great defensive third baseman, and not so good with the bat this year, and really kind of left at the end of the college postseason. Fair to say, if you watched any of the college, anything, basically, you didn't have to be the College World Series, but Super Regionals, Regionals, you would probably just as a fan go, well, this guy's going to pitch in pro ball because he was a dominant pitcher. And the thing about it is Bobby Dalbec didn't want to pitch. Bobby Dalbec wants to hit. Bobby Dalbec dominated the Cape Cod League last summer, showed his power. And now here we are as the end of the, really as we come very close to wrapping up the 2016 pro season. The Red Sox believed in the bat. They were willing to draft him as a hitter. And Bobby Dalbec's hitting about 370 with some power in the New York Penn League. Short stint, 25 games. But kudos to him for essentially getting back somewhat to where he was. And again, we expect guys, college guys, to do well in short season ball. But in the case of Bobby Dalbec, I do think it's a little bit more important because this is a guy who really struggled to make contact this spring.
JJ, he just needed, he really did need some confidence in his offense. You know, this is not like, you know, mid-2000 San Francisco Giants where Dick Tidgo drafts the guy and waits for him to fail as a hitter so they can put him on the bump. The Red Sox, you know, wanted Bobby Dalbec as a hitter. He hit 12 home runs in basically 2.5 weeks in the Cape last year. I had one club tell me that, you know, when they did a fall in-house interview with Bobby Dalbec, that he was telling all the teams, I don't want to pitch. I only want to hit this spring. But a, you know, coaching change at Arizona, he expected that he would just hit. I think it does tell you something about the makeup, that they need him to pitch.
And they needed him.
And they needed him. And first, they use him in a relief role. He was a moment of truth guy the first half of the year. They went to a series at, I believe it was at BYU, that was at Utah. They were using him out of the bullpen. They got behind in all three games early, got swept, if memory serves, by the Utes. And they had a midweek game on Monday against BYU. BYU doesn't play Sundays, so if you play them on Monday, they would like to play you on Monday. So Arizona played on Monday, and they just decided, you know what, we didn't use Dalbec all weekend. We're going to start him. We need the innings. And he dealt against a very offensive BYU team. And that was kind of where his transformation started during the college season. But this is a guy who hit, so he had 15 home runs in the spring of 2015 as a sophomore at Arizona. 12 more in the Cape. In between, he was terrible for TBUSA. That's where I saw him in person. I saw him in Tucson last year, opening weekend. And I saw him with TBUSA, and it was bad looks every time. When I saw him in Omaha this year, he pitched great in a loss to Oklahoma State. I talked to him after the game, and you know, he was not interested in pitching as a professional. So, and the Red Sox weren't. But after the draft, I got some other teams to admit, yeah, by the end of the year, and watching in the postseason, like the regional weekend, our mind had changed. And Tom Holliday, the father of Matt and Oklahoma State coach Josh, broadcast his series that weekend. And in regional weekend at Louisiana Lafayette, he was up to 96 with movement. He loved him on the mound. And Tom Holliday was a pitching coach. So Dalbec was a legit prospect in both regards. But I'm happy for him that the Red Sox want him to hit and that he's getting some confidence. And one other thing I throw in here, JJ, is that remember how last year with Kevin Newman had hit in the summer. He hit in his college career, but then he got into Pac-12 play. And he really got pitched to very tough. And the book was out. Let's give the Pac-12 coaches some credit here. They pitched Bobby Dalbec really tough as a junior, too. And he didn't go off offensively like he had as a sophomore. The same thing that happened to Kevin Newman. So maybe Pac-12 coaches know what they're doing with the way they call games. And their pitchers are able to execute to really neutralize some of these guys who've had really good pro careers to this point. Those guys were better hitters in pro ball than they were in college. I think a lot of that has to do with how they were pitched in college.
And that is an interesting point, because also you are, as you pointed out, it is about how you get pitched in college is partly about how the coaching staff calls the game.
Right.
Obviously, it's a little different when you go in pro ball, the catcher is going to call the game. That may have been like for Bobby Dalbec a little bit this summer, like, oh, this is great.
I guarantee you he saw more fastballs the first month in pro ball than he saw all spring, just in terms of percentage and volume.
Oh, I guarantee you that, absolutely, too. I completely agree.
And that's, I'm sure Kevin Newman has seen a lot more fastballs in pro ball as well. And he got fastball in his entire junior season at Arizona. And didn't show that he could adjust. Now, I'm sure that he's probably adjusted better this year, too. I haven't, you know, broken down Kevin Newman yet with anybody this year. I'm working on Florida State League calls next week. But staff development came first for me this week. I had to work on a style guide, you know, and this immaculately planned trip.
But
Josh, what do you got on Bobby Dalbec or any similar players? No Sean Chase anecdote here? You're in full Ducks regalia today, by the way.
I am in full Ducks regalia. I didn't wear a hat, but
so it's not quite full. You're in Peoria Desert Dogs regalia.
I am in Phoenix Desert Dogs.
Dang it!
Phoenix Desert Dogs regalia. No, I've seen Sean Chase before. We really don't want to talk about Sean Chase.
No, I don't really want to talk about Sean Chase.
We do have, if we want to transition, that we were going to talk about the piece that I wrote recently about the young Yankees at Pulaski. That works. I wrote a piece recently talking about, you know, a guy like Gary Sanchez. Took 8 years for him to get to the big leagues, and now that they have a whole group, a slew of guys from their 2014, whatever that year that was.
Their mega international class. Sign,
yeah, that class. They're all at low rookie level Pulaski right now.
Almost all, because isn't one of them still there's still a couple in the GCL.
Yeah, Nelson Gomez is in the GCL. Miguel Flames is in the GCL, but it's Dermis Garcia, it's Wilkerman Garcia, it's Osvaldo Cabrera, it's Estevan Florial.
His name is Flames, like it looks like flames.
It does look like flames, but it's Flames.
That's pretty sweet. Flames emoji.
I wish he were with an Arizona team, so he'd be Flames in the Fire League.
That'd be good.
But in any case, those guys are all mega talented. They're not putting up super numbers, except for Blake Rutherford, who doesn't really fit in the J2 class. But
he's a good bit older than those guys.
Yes, they're going to be exercises in patience. They've all got big time tools. I mean, Dermis Garcia produces some of the highest exit velocities in the system, right there with Judge. Estevan Florial is an excellent all around ball player. Wilkerman's got some chops at shortstop, but hasn't really produced this year with the bat. And if just on the eye test, you could see his exit velocity is not there. Osvaldo Cabrera is a 17-year-old in the Abbey League who, crushed in the DSL, then crushed for a week in the GCL, then got promoted, and he has absolutely no hype, but there will be some. He's the goods, too. But all these guys are going to take a long time. Guys like Clint Frazier and Jorge Mateo and Gleyber Torres and technically still Judge and Sanchez are new guys on the horizon, but there could be this second wave coming that will even further improve their rebuilding plans.
I think that happens at the big league level too, though. Like what I was talking about with Dalbec and Newman, JJ. I don't think the scouting report necessarily is out on Gary Sanchez, because when did he ever hit 8 home runs in 17 games in the minor leagues? No, that ever happened.
He's always. Well, this is actually this has been the best stretch that Gary Sanchez has ever had, which is fair, which is fine, because this would be a great stretch for literally
anybody,
a Hall of Famer in the prime of his career.
Gary Sanchez isn't going to be this all his career, but
I feel confident in saying that, yes.
But it's exciting to see him producing at the big league level.
Right.
When the Yankees really had to wait 7 years. He was 2009 signee, $3 million, went straight to the top 10, and he had ups and he had a lot of downs in the minor leagues.
Right. Until recently, I mean, there were still questions about him as a receiver, and there still are. But he's shown an incredible throwing arm in the majors.
Which we've always had him as a seven arm,
right,
and seven raw power.
Seven or eight arm, big time raw power. And he's doing exactly what the Yankees expected he could do, best case scenario. Now, at some point, someone will get a book on him, and he'll have to adjust to the league, and the league will adjust to him, and then it'll all average out, and we'll see what he is. But for right now, what it's looking like is pretty tantalizing for sure. And, you know, talking about guys developing, talking about guys who hasn't faced certain pitches before, like you were talking about, I saw that same Pulaski team get absolutely mowed. As a matter of fact, Rutherford led off the game with a single, left with an injury, and nobody got a hit the rest of the day. Christian Castillo, who is mid-80s fastball and an average curveball, but he could spot them, and they did not know what to do with him. He struck out, I think, 13 that day.
That's rookie ball for you.
That is a rookie ball for you. And I asked the scout the next day about it, and he said, yeah, probably org fodder. But for that day, he looked like Cy Young against a bunch of guys who haven't seen a quality curveball in a long time.
And that's, that's notable. Another question I got in the chat was, is one asked about Tyler Sapucki, who's had a great year.
Thomas Sapucki.
Thomas, thank you. Thomas Sapucki, who's had a great year with the Mets.
Tyler.
He had a great year with the Mets. He started out, really a lot of his damage he did was in the Appy League, and he's been promoted to the New York Penn League. And he's a really solid prospect. At the same time, he also is a guy who knows what he's doing. And if you know what you're doing as a prospect, as a pitching prospect in the Appy League, you are going to dominate. And that's, again, it's not that he's not a very solid prospect, because he is, but you do have to temper it a little bit, because the Appy League is one of those places where if you can locate a breaking ball, if you can throw a changeup, you are ahead of the game.
If you can locate a fastball and just get ahead of hitters,
you're ahead of the game.
That's a huge difference. So
we
definitely hit some traffic now. So I guess
we're gonna wrap this up as we near Kannapolis and Alec Hansen. So again, you probably will not be hearing this before that game because it's going to be hard for me to upload it before then. But
we apologize for the tweet storm ahead of time.
We apologize in advance for the tweet storm. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And for John Manuel, Josh Norris, JJ Cooper, so long, everybody.